You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we are going to talk sight loss journeys now in our sight loss story feature today. We are speaking to George Bungi from South Africa. George, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Hubert. Thank you so much for having me on. I really do appreciate it.
So can I ask you first to start with, you know, what is your sight condition, how you got diagnosed? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I don't know as much about this as I'd like because, you know, it was very convoluted, all the stories that I was told. But basically, it's called ROP, so retinopathy of prematurity. Now, from what I understand, if you're born super, super prem, you run the risk of having basically irreparable damage to your eyes. My retinas were detached. I think my optic nerve was irreparably damaged as well, and I have cataracts in both of them, so I've got no usable vision at all. I used to have light perception until I was about 3, but I don't remember anything about that. I do think I can still see a little bit of light, though, but I'm not entirely sure. I can't say with certainty. I believe I was one of the first in South Africa, and I don't think anything still exists in terms of archives, but my case became quite public when I was younger, because I was born in a state-run hospital. Now, I want to just explain a little bit for those of you who don't know how things work over here. South Africa, because of its history and because of apartheid, is basically got what I would describe as sectors. You've got the first world sector, which is, you know, where things work most of the time, where you can live like you would in a Western country. You have all of your amenities. Obviously, not all of them work perfectly, but you know, it's very, very much comparable to a Western lifestyle. And then you have the third world, which is what you would expect from, say, a much less developed African country. And I was born into the third world sort of type of system. And I went to the state-run hospital. And the state-run hospitals, in many cases, especially in the smaller towns like where I was born, are not as well run as we wish they were. There's often equipment shortages, staff shortages, overcrowding, you know, and I've experienced that in multiple different times in my life. And I was born in one of these sort of government hospitals in a small town, which is not a big city, which means that the hospital there did not have, as far as I know, the all of the nice new equipment that you would have expected at a much more either a bigger university hospital or trauma center or a private hospital, because in South Africa, you have to have what we call medical aid or health insurance if you want to access those private hospitals, or you know, you're a patient of the state.
As you were growing up and obviously adapting to life with sight loss and learning how to do things differently, what did you find helped you the most to adapt to life with sight loss?
That's a very nuanced answer that I have for you, because I was living in a part of the country where blindness organizations weren't very prevalent, right? We didn't have an organization that you could just approach and all of a sudden get help. You know, we didn't know anything about Braille. I was the first blind person in my family, and you know, we knew absolutely nothing. So I suppose the thing that helped me the most was the kindness of strangers, because they would often try and help us figure out how to do certain things. And a lot of strangers would send me gifts, be it CDs, be it toys, be it things that they thought I might be able to use. And, you know, my grandmother used to work at a sort of a after-school type service. And a lot of the kids kind of took me under their wing. And they tried to teach me a lot of the things that they were learning. So, for example, one of them, you know, would try to teach me how to write or how to draw. I didn't get very far. I could do the number 8. And they would try and teach me about some of the things that they were learning. And you know, they would play with me and all those things. And I think that's what sort of helped the most. It wasn't necessarily a blindness-specific thing. But, I mean, if I had to give it one thing, it would probably be just how helpful people were.
Now, you also have a passion for video games, which I can certainly relate to because I love video games, and I still do. And it's always an interesting case regarding video game accessibility or, in some games, lack thereof. But can you tell me a little bit about kind of how your game passion started and developed as you were dealing with sight loss?
Growing up, my brother was given... I do believe it was an Atari 2600 when he was young. And my first impression of video games was, you know, those 8-bit sounds, the bleeps and the bloops. And I thought, this is boring. And then he migrated in the 2000s to a PlayStation 2, back when they were the hot new thing on the block. And I think, you know, being a blind person, I kind of just dismissed the whole idea of gaming as something that I couldn't do. In 2012... you know, going to the toy shop to buy, you know, something to play with, I remembered that I'd been told by a friend some months ago of a sort of a handheld type device that was developed by Leapfrog. And I had a relative with me, and this relative and I looked at the device, and I wanted it. I thought it sounded cool. I don't even know why. I just did. And I said, oh, you know, I have blind friends and they're using this device, and initially they were skeptical. It was quite a lot of money for a child to be spent on a child back in those days, and some random person sort of piped up in the shop speaking a mix of Afrikaans and English and said, no, my child's got one, they're 4 and it talks to them and it's amazing, and you know, give it a try. This was a random customer, by the way, and I began to really enjoy some of the games on that device. It was a bit difficult to use because it was entirely reliant on a touch display. There were buttons, but the touchscreen made up a rather large sort of percentage of the device in terms of the way that you'd use it. And then that same year, we both, me and my brother, were given a joint gift of a PS2 and some old games. And I began to experiment a little bit more, and I got my first computer that time, and you know, a friend of mine about a year later introduced me to accessible audio games. But I remember with the PS2, those games intrigued me a lot more because they were, you know, obviously sort of these big budget affairs with all these lovely cinematic voice acting and scores and things. And I was amazed, but I could never play them. And I remember sort of going around the shops trying to find games to play. You know, the internet wasn't particularly prevalent in my household back then. And everything was basically a guessing game. I tried Final Fantasy X. I tried some of the old Naruto games and Bakugan. That was actually turned out to be quite accessible. I was very surprised to use this device. Luckily, the PS2 didn't have a user interface that you had to navigate. It was pretty much press the reset button, open the disc tray, take the disc out, stick the new one in, press the reset button again, and then the game would load. And then it was pretty much, you know, teach yourself the menus, teach yourself where things were. And that's pretty much how we did it, because we had no OCR back then. We had no Be My Eyes. We had no ChatGPT or Gemini or anything of that sort to help you. So you kind of just had to do it yourself.
If there's one game you could play that maybe either isn't accessible or, you know, is not fully accessible, but you would love it to be, what would it be?
Now, I guess it would probably be the Persona 5 Royal, because somebody went on the audiogames.net forum and played a prank and told us that they'd made an accessibility mod for this game, and it was on sale. It was like 75% off, and I got so excited because, you know, they said that the mod was complete and we could beat the game from start to finish. And I just thought, you know, this game's gotten a 10 out of 10 from IGN. And it sounds so cool. It sounds like something I can sink my teeth into. And it was a prank. And so it's probably Persona 5 Royal. Any accessibility mod developers, nudge, nudge, please. Yes, by the way, if you can.
It's always the wish, isn't it? Bring in some accessibility mods for that. For a game is always nice. For me, it would have to be the Grand Theft Auto series. It's something I used to play as a child. It's something I used to play when I was younger a little bit, and it's games that I really quite liked, for someone that liked kind of action games and things like that. But obviously the accessibility of a game of that complexity is not exactly easy to achieve. But if something could ever be done, then this would be the game series for me that would bring back my memories of my younger days, which I would love to experience again.
Hey, are you excited for Grand Theft Auto 6?
I'm excited to find out what it is and what it has in general, but in the back of your mind, there's always going to be that thing of that knowledge of it's most likely not going to be very accessible. So my gamer kind of persona will be excited, but the kind of, you know, sight loss based, accessibility based persona will kind of be like, well, it's great, but will I be able to play it?
I would say I'm 100% sure it's not going to be accessible. Maybe it'll be more moddable than GTA 5 was, but I don't think it's going to be accessible, and I wouldn't hold my breath.
Based on your own experiences and your own sight loss journey up to this point, what advice would you give to people who, you know, have just lost their sight and who maybe are at a stage where they really want to know, well, what to do, how to best, you know, live life and adapt things? What would your message to them be?
The first thing I would say to you is don't be afraid, because losing vision is a scary thing. It's a huge thing. It can be a traumatic thing, but your life isn't going to be over. You're still going to be able to enjoy a lot of the things that you used to. Maybe you'd have to do them slightly differently, and it's going to take getting used to. That's true, but you're still going to be able to enjoy life. And you know, to go hand in hand with that, try and get yourself hooked up with other blind people. I mean no disrespect when I say what I'm about to say, but it's very important to get the angle from both the blindness organizations as well as people who've actually lived this way all their life, because they may have different viewpoints, you know, regarding something like Braille. You know, the organizations might say to you, okay, well, you know, Braille is great, you should learn it. But then if you speak to someone else who's, you know, not affiliated with an organization, they might say, oh, you know, I don't ever need to use Braille, so I wouldn't stress about it. And I think it's important to try and get that balanced viewpoint as much as you can, and just try and get involved in the online community. Don't wait until, you desperately need help, but start immersing yourself in that community, in that world, to try and make the transition as sort of smooth as possible. It's not going to be completely smooth. It's going to be bumpy, but I say, try and do everything you can to make it as smooth as possible.
Fantastic, George. It's always great to hear these sorts of experiences and advice based on them. Thank you very much, George Bungie, for sharing your sight loss story with us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.